This morning we revive the practice of preceding the World Report with a related informational question. Who do you think offered Iran the full nuclear fuel cycle in 1976? Stay tuned for the answer to that and lots more. This week, the governing board of the UN's International Atomic Energy Agency voted to charge Iran with violating its nuclear non-proliferation obligations and to set the stage for sending the matter to the UN Security Council. The final version of the resolution does not refer Iran to the Security Council, but it cites Iran's history of concealment and asks Iran to stop all activity related to uranium enrichment. It goes on to say that Iran's non-compliance with the NPT safeguards and the IAEA's statute gives rise to questions that are within the competence of the Security Council, given its responsibility for maintaining international peace and security. For the first time, the board failed to reach consensus when approving a resolution on nuclear safeguards. Nevertheless, it is legitimate. 22 members voted to pass the measure. Venezuela alone opposed it, while Russia, China, and 10 others abstained. The United States has been pushing for the board to report the situation to the Security Council since Director El Baradei first reported in late 2003 that Iran had not provided a complete account of its nuclear activities. France, Germany, and the United Kingdom did not join the push until their talks with Iran collapsed last month. Possibly the most momentous vote for the motion came from India. In what Praful Bidwai, a New Delhi-based columnist, called the greatest shift in New Delhi's foreign policy since independence from colonial rule in 1947, India joined the mostly Western nations voting for the motion. For decades, India acted in solidarity with the non-aligned movement. Now, says Bidwai, the non-aligned movement stands split, with countries like Peru, Ghana, and Ecuador joining hands with the US-EU, while Malaysia, South Africa, Mexico, Brazil, which have been proactive in the non-aligned movement, abstained. Even Pakistan abstained. The Singh government's decision has been attacked by both left and right. To the left, an ally of the ruling United Progressive Alliance, led by the Congress Party, the resolution virtually converts India into a U.S. ally and camp follower. The right-wing pro-Hindu BJP, too, has opposed India's decision to vote for the resolution in Vienna and accused the government of surreptitiously making a major foreign policy shift. Bidwai worries that India's vote will jeopardize the Iran-India gas pipeline passing through Pakistan that is currently under negotiation. This enjoys wide domestic support and has been seen as the key to promoting peace and prosperity in the South Asia-West Asia region, as well as opening a conduit to energy-rich Central Asia. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Hamid Reza Asafi told reporters at a weekly news conference, "We will reconsider our economic cooperation with those countries that voted against us. India's vote came as a great surprise to us," he said. But Iran's chief nuclear negotiator, Ali Larijani, said Iran was willing to continue its friendly relationship with India. Quote, "We should not lose a friend because of one incident," Larijani told reporters. "We will have talks with India over Iran's nuclear ambitions in the future," he said. According to the Associated Press, Foreign Minister Manoucher Mottaki responded immediately to the resolution on Iranian state television. Quote, "The resolution is illegal, illogical, and politically motivated." End quote. India's Subhash Kabila, a strategic affairs consultant with the South Asia Analysis Group, agrees that the opposition of Western governments to Iran's nuclear program is based more on politics than law. Kapila gives the following chronology. In 1967, the USA laid the foundation of Iran's nuclear program by providing a 5-megawatt nuclear research reactor for the Tehran Nuclear Research Center. In 1968, Iran signed the Non-Proliferation Treaty. The United States drew up an accord with the Shah of Iran to construct 23 nuclear power stations by the year 2000. In 1975, U.S. National Security Decision Memorandum 292, signed by Henry Kissinger and entitled U.S.-Iran Nuclear Cooperation, detailed the sale of $6 billion worth of nuclear equipment to Iran. Then, in 1976, President Gerald Ford took two important decisions on Iran's nuclear program. A U.S. presidential directive offered Iran a deal for the building and operating of a reprocessing facility, which would extract plutonium from nuclear reactor fuel, giving them a complete nuclear fuel cycle. This directive stated that introduction of nuclear power will both provide for the growing needs of Iran's economy and free remaining oil reserves for export or conversion to petrochemicals. This United States-sponsored Iranian nuclear program came to an abrupt end in 1979 with the Iranian Revolution. Foreign Minister Mottaki also pointed out that, quote, Iran has no legal commitment to continue implementation of the additional protocol, end quote. The additional protocol, which Iran has signed and adhered to so far, even though it has not been ratified, permits international nuclear inspectors to conduct snap inspections and more intrusive monitoring than is allowed by standard rules. Kaveh Afrasiabi, an Iranian expatriate living in the U.S. and writing for Asia Times Online, has been arguing for months that there is still time to talk as long as the U.S. is willing to acknowledge Iran's legitimate security concerns. Jefraim Gundzik, who is president of a company that provides emerging markets investment risk analysis to individuals and institutions, agrees. He finds the same shallow diplomacy and diplomatic ineptitude in nuclear negotiations with both Iran and North Korea. Quote, the U.S. and the European Union presuppose the evil intentions of North Korea and Iran. This presupposition implies that the U.S. and EU must subjugate North Korea and Iran in order to control nuclearization in these countries. The diplomatic ineptitude fostering subjugation has accelerated Pyongyang's and Tehran's nuclear programs. Unless Washington and Brussels recognize the sovereign rights of North Korea and Iran, nuclearization in these countries will continue to accelerate, greatly amplifying security risks in Asia and the Middle East. Rather than trying to subjugate them, the U.S. and EU must recognize the sovereign right of North Korea and Iran to civilian nuclear programs. In the case of North Korea, Washington must give Pyongyang light water reactors in order to encourage nuclear disarmament. In the case of Iran, the EU and the U.S. must allow Tehran to master the nuclear fuel cycle in order to produce fuel for its nuclear reactors. Better inspection mechanisms by the IAEA could easily prevent military application of civilian nuclear programs in North Korea and Iran. But rather than reform the IAEA to improve its ability to control nuclearization, the EU and U.S. want to directly control nuclearization through subjugation, an approach that is proving unworkable and is accelerating nuclearization. The continued acceleration of nuclearization in North Korea and Iran is inevitable unless the U.S. and EU recognize the sovereignty of North Korea and Iran. A nuclear test by North Korea and Iran's withdrawal from the NPT are increasingly probable. These events will greatly amplify the security risk in Asia and the Middle East. Higher security risk will fan higher global inflation and slower global economic growth in the months and years ahead. End quote. That's it for this Monday. This feature draws on material from the Global Security Network, South Asia Analysis Group, Reuters, and Asia Times Online. If you would like to suggest a story or comment about anything you hear on Monday Morning World Report, email Earthling, that's EARTHLING, at netidea.com. Put Monday Morning World Report in the subject line to make sure I don't mistake your message for spam. I'm Jim Terrell at Kootenai Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening.